Hey there, it's David L. Gray in the morning. After the news headlines, I'll have today's leading story for you. Don Lemon, likely to be charged on federal charges related to his persecution of Christians in Minnesota a few days ago. In about 5 past hour, I'm going to inspire you with a commentary on today's reading at Mass about the young King David. And I hope that your next 30 minutes with me brings you lots of joy and lots of peace. Let's get started. This is David L. Gray in the morning, and here are your news headlines for today with Tanya.
Today is January 21st, 2026, Wednesday of the second week in ordinary time. Today, the church celebrates the memorial of Saint Agnes, the young Roman martyr whose purity and courage have inspired Christians for centuries. The readings today begin with the first book of Samuel, where David steps forward to face Goliath. Saul doubts him, but David trusts the Lord who delivered him from the lion and the bear. Armed with only a sling and a stone, he defeats the giant, showing that God saves not with sword or spear, but by his own power. The responsorial psalm proclaims, "Blessed be the Lord, my rock," a reminder that God is our fortress and deliverer. In the gospel from Mark, Jesus heals a man with a withered hand on the Sabbath. The Pharisees, hardened of heart, begin plotting with the Herodians to destroy him. In the news, Archbishop Timothy Broglio, head of the Archdiocese for the Military Services, said in a BBC interview that U.S. service members could morally refuse an order they judge to be morally questionable, even in a hypothetical conflict involving Greenland. He acknowledged that such a refusal could place a soldier in an untenable situation, but insisted that conscience remains paramount. Legal experts quickly noted that U.S. law does not recognize selective conscientious objection, meaning troops who refuse orders do so at significant personal risk. Broglio's comments mark one of the strongest recent statements from a U.S. military archbishop on the primacy of conscience. Meanwhile, in France, the National Catholic Register reports that the 2026 Paris March for Life drew around 10,000 participants, overwhelmingly young, but no active bishops attended. Only Bishop Emeritus Dominique Ray was present. Organizers say bishops have been absent for 5 or 6 years, even as youth turnout continues to grow. In the United States, the pro-life movement is preparing for the National March for Life in Washington this Friday, where Vice President J.D. Vance is scheduled to speak. Across the country, political tensions remain high as debates continue over executive authority, domestic deployments, and the limits of federal power. Internationally, European leaders are voicing concern over Arctic security and NATO cohesion, especially as geopolitical pressure increases around Greenland and the North Atlantic corridor. Among conservative Catholic circles, there is growing momentum behind grassroots Eucharistic revival groups and independent pro-life initiatives led largely by young adults. Many say they are seeking clarity, tradition, and public witness at a time when institutional leadership often feels distant or muted. On this day in Catholic history, the Church honors St. Agnes, the young martyr who chose fidelity to Christ over the demands of the Roman authorities. Her name has been invoked in the Roman canon for centuries, a testament to her enduring witness. And for a lighter note, David may have defeated Goliath with a single stone, but most of us are still trying to defeat the snooze button with three alarms. This has been Tanya with your January 21st, 2026 briefing from David L. Gray in the morning. I'll be back on Wednesday at the same time for your next update. Thank you. Today is January 21st, 2026.
Thanks, Tanya.
Wednesday of the second week in ordinary time. Today, the church celebrates the
Thank you, Tanya, for those news headlines. And St. Agnes, pray for us. So we begin this morning with news being reported by persecution.org that Sunday in Kaduna State, Nigeria, Heavily armed attackers stormed at least two churches, abducting 160 Christians, dragging men, women, and children into the bushes while services were underway. Local Christian leaders say that the attackers arrived in large numbers. They blocked entrances and seized entire congregations mid-service. So this is only the latest in a long, brutal pattern of mass kidnappings targeting rural Christian communities there. And here's the tragedy. Stories like these are barely noticed anymore. We've heard so many headlines of stories like these coming out of parts and regions of Africa. Hundreds of students taken, entire villages disappearing, churches raided, that the world has grown numb. Remember, November 25 last year, armed raiders raided St. Mary's Catholic Primary School, a secondary school in Prairie, Nigeria, where, but what shocked us, that should shock us, but this has just become routine. And what should provoke outrage has now barely earned like a shrug. But when we look at what's happening closer to home in churches like in Minnesota, being disrupted, religious spaces being treated as fair game, we have to ask ourselves a hard question right now. How far are we from seeing the same thing regarding religious persecution and religious liberties being taken away here? Are we going back to a time in the United States where the Ku Klux Klan was burning churches down and setting crosses ablaze in people's yard? If we're willing to normalize this type of hostility again towards Christians in the United States, we shouldn't be surprised when the line between disruption and persecution starts to blur. And when we have public figures like Don Lemon, who, according to the Justice Department and Pam Bondi, is going to be arrested soon, put in cuffs, given a perp walk, and charged with the Ku Klux Klan Act and the Freedom of Access Act, the FACE Act. Yet, who looks at this invasion of his, of a church, and he likes to describe it as being Christians just being uncomfortable, who frames it as an issue, oh, Christians would be just being entitled, it's privilege, and who's insisting that this is simply what protests look like. I'm going to show you a video of Don Lemon where he doubles down on the idea that people interrupting worship, they were those people who walked into this space, who persecuted these Christians, who attacked these families. Those people, the attackers, were the ones who were somehow owed space and that the congregation should somehow just accept it. Check out this hubris in this video.
The alphas they think they are, like a hive mind. None of them are unique. None of them are the alphas they think they are. They just all take their orders every day. It's Elon saying, what's Trump saying, and they have to bend and mold. And you are a prize for them, an independent, gay, black, happy, successful man. And
and look, she has to lead in, right? She has to lead in with the accidents, everything that Don has taken, nothing that he's earned, right? Everything that he was just born with, according to him, he's born black and born gay. Why is he getting credit for this? Why is, and it amazes me that these people, they always want to say, they wouldn't use these accidents. Even like Jasmine Crockett always talking about how she's a black woman, right? So whenever they're persecuted, whenever something happens to them like that, whenever they're suffering, right? They always want to play that card, right? Oh, this happened to me because I'm a black woman, or this happened to me because I'm a black gay man. Yeah, when something good happens, like Karine Jean-Pierre, she becomes the first black lesbian something. Now Native American, I don't know what she was, but she becomes the first press secretary with these accidents. Oh, I'm the first this and that. But as soon as they get persecuted, it turns into an opportunity to play victim.
This is an attempt to intimidate and beat you down.
Mm-hmm. I don't disagree with that. And I didn't hear the first part, but I think that there is obviously there's racism in it. The whole point of it is that they're trying to they're detaining people on the streets because of accidents.
Oh yeah, not because you did anything wrong whatsoever. Nothing wrong whatsoever, just because you're black.
Since in the color of their skin, and they're also targeting people of color and black people as well as brown people. So there is a certain degree of racism there, and there's a certain degree of entitlement. I think people who are, you know, in the religious groups like that, it's not the type of Christianity that I practice, but I think that they're entitled, and that.
And Don, we're sure that you don't practice any type of verifiable, like real Christianity. Nothing that's ever been documented on this in this timeline here. But it's crazy that they keep saying that this church here, this city's church, this Protestant church in Minnesota, is some sort of white racist church. When there's no evidence that the city's church was politically aligned in any way. I looked at their website. I couldn't find anything that suggested or anything in any sort of news, any sort of political endorsements that showed that they're politically aligned in any way, in any partisan, no partisan agenda whatsoever. It seems like these labels that the liberal media keeps throwing around, that this is just some white racist church full of a bunch of white supremacists, it just came from the pundits, not from the church's website. No political endorsements, no partisan mission statements, no ideological branding, no white nationalism, no evidence of Trump affiliation. I think there's some sort of pastor there who they thought was associated with some sort of ICE or something like that. But and to be sure, I mean, clearly, we're not saying. Say that there's not an issue of, white supremacy or racism in particular Christian Christ-professing denominations, or even some of your traditionalist Catholic church communities. We know that's an issue, but then just to lump them in with this city's church in Minneapolis, this city, without evidence. I think there's plenty of evidence going around. We could point to you these churches that are clearly into a white supremacist theology. Clearly. And we could show you some that are into a black supremacist theology. We know who they are. We know where they're at. This church wasn't one of them. But again, the reason why people bring this up, the reason why they say this is an issue, to give them license and excuse to attack Christians. If Christians are bad people, then we could just kill them all. That's what they're saying.
Entitlement comes from a white supremacy. And they think that this country was built for them, that it is a Christian country, when actually we left England because we wanted religious freedom. It's religious freedom, but only if you're a Christian and only if you're a white male, pretty much. And so, yeah,
So only if you're a Christian white male are you entitled to religious protections. Other than that, we just attack you. We can do anything we want to you.
Absolutely, 100%. But it's an intimidation tactic. And, you know, I said, I don't understand how I've become the face of it when I was a journalist. I do understand that I'm the biggest name there. And I'm also, as I was on with my producers this morning, you know, you and Kylie talk all the time. My producers were saying, I said, how did I become the face of this? And my producer said, Don, you're a gay black man in America and you have a platform and you're the biggest name. Of course, you're going to be the person that they single out and they're going to make the headline because it plays to their base. And their base is full of racist, bigoted homophobes like Nicki Minaj, by the way.
Oh, pop that up like a hive mind. None of them are unique. So none of them are.
So that's just where we're at on this topic on here. And this is really that posture, that inversion of who is the aggressor here and who's the victim. It's exactly that type of cultural shift that we're talking about. A shift where sanctity of worship is no longer assumed. No longer assume that you have sanctity of worship if we can say that you're the villain, you're the problem. So this is a shift where hostility towards faith is minimized or excused. A shift where people disrupting the church are treated as the ones with the higher moral ground, right? That's where we're at. And this should concern all of us. So the fact that you have Pam Bondi again, the Attorney General of the United States, and that she has plans to arrest and cuff Don Lemon, investigate him for the Ku Klux Klan Act and the FACE Act, is a good thing, I think. Sometimes people need to find out that they went too far, right? When rhetoric crosses a line into excusing and normalizing religious persecution, accountability matters. Public voices, they do shape public attitudes. And when those attitudes start to erode houses of worship, somebody just has to say enough. So yeah, I think Don Lemon has become the new face of FAFO. He's fooled around. Now he's about to find out. So this is David L. Gray in the morning. I'm coming up next, your commentaries on the readings at today's Mass. Hello, I'm David L. Gray. I'm a Catholic theologian, writing and speaking and teaching courses you can find at stdominicsmedia.com. My work centers on liturgical theology, which is also the focus of my doctoral studies at the Catholic University of America. Welcome to my morning show. It's here where I'll walk you through the day's top stories, offer an uplifting reflection on the readings at Mass, and introduce you to the saints of the day. We're here every weekday at 6:45 a.m. If this show enriches your day, I hope you come back, and I look forward to connecting with you. Let's get into today's show. Welcome back. This is David L. Gray in the morning. So let's give a commentary on today's readings at Mass, and I'll let you get out of here, back to your day. And I hope that what I have to say here inspires you. So today's first reading, as you see down in the ticker, comes from 1 Samuel chapter 17, verses 32 and 33, 37, 40 through 51. The psalm from today is from Psalm 144. Blessed be the Lord, my rock, which is a good psalm to relate to David picking up a stone and smashing Goliath. And today's gospel reading comes from Mark chapter 3, verses 1 through 6, where Jesus entered a synagogue. And there's a man there with a withered hand, and he healed it. I always like how Jesus, you know, you ever notice a lot of his miracles and a lot of his exorcisms take place in a, you know, a Jewish synagogue, right? So so let's get into today's reading. Let me bring it up here on the screen for you. I'm going to comment just a little bit here on the first reading. I remember last Monday, last week, we read about the Israelites going into battle with the Philistines. Let me get the right one here. All right, there we go. And so last week we went into about the, you know, the Israelites going to battle with the Philistines. And I remember they took with them the Ark of the Covenant. First, they were defeated by the Philistines. And then he said, well, let us go back to the camp and let us get the Ark of the Covenant and take that into battle, right? And so I related that then last week on a few interviews I did when I was talking about my new book, The Liturgy of the Catholic Mass, on the liturgical sense of Catholic Mass. I was talking about how we can look at that incident with them taking the Ark of the Covenant into battle with them. We can relate that to the Catholic Mass. Because in the Catholic Mass, we receive something so much greater than the Ark of the Covenant. We receive Jesus Christ himself, the Holy Eucharist, in our bodies. And then the Mass dismisses us with the Et Missa Est out into the world to go do battle. Right? So here, we see something very similar with David and how we can relate this to the liturgy. So it says that David spoke to Saul, the king. And he said, let your majesty not lose courage. Because Saul was worried the Philistines were ready for battle. They had a giant with them, Goliath. He said, "Let your majesty not lose courage. I am at your service to go and fight this Philistine." But Saul answered him, "David, you cannot go up against this Philistine to fight with him, for you are only a youth, while he has been a warrior from his youth." But David continued, "The Lord who delivered me from the claws of the lion and the bear will also keep me safe from the clutches of this Philistine." David answered Saul, "Go. The Lord be with you." And this is the same dismissal that we hear at the Mass. Go. You are dismissed. As Saul says, go. The Lord be with you. Go. Preach the good news, minister. This is the et missa est that we hear at Mass that Saul said to David. And so this relates. So I want to talk to you about three quick things this morning to get you ready for today. There's three points to take away from this reading. And also, if you hadn't got my book, The Liturgical Sense of the Readings at Mass, make sure you get it. This is year A. Of course, we'll have year B and C coming out. But this is year A because we're in year A. And this book teaches you and explains to you and inspires you how to live the Mass in the world every day. It breaks down every reading for every Sunday and Holy Day of Obligation. It's a powerful book. I definitely recommend to you. If you go to stdominicsmedia.com, click on our QR code, make sure you use the discount code I Love the Mass. I Love the Mass. And you get 30% off. So it's almost free. All right. But so there's three takeaways from this Gauss reading that is going to help you today. The first thing that we learn from this story with David going to do battle with the Philistine is, and it relates the same way that we learn at Mass. And we're going to relate. We'll say that David picking up his slingshot and his rock and going to do battle with Goliath is the same thing that the Mass does when it sends us out into the world. So the first thing that we notice here with David was first a willingness, sort of that, that here I am, Lord, right? Here I am, Lord. I've come to do your will. And that's what David says to Saul. He says, "I am at your service to go fight this Philistine. Here I am, Lord." The same thing as Samuel. Here I am, Lord. So the first thing that we'd have to have in our mind is a willingness and availability to do the Lord's will. And this is what the Mass teaches. When we come to the Mass, when we just by going to the Mass, just by attending to the worship service, that we are saying to the Lord, "Here I am." We're raising our hands. We're showing up. "Here I am, Lord. I'm here. Yes, I messed up this week. Yes, I've sinned. I've sinned yesterday, perhaps even this morning, but here I am for repentance, for redemption, for healing, for sanctification." So first we'll have a willingness if we're going to do the Lord's will. And so we'll be like David this way. "Here I am, Lord." We'll be like Samuel this way. "Here I am." Now, the second thing, now you showed up, right? You can relate this. Take this teaching with you to work this morning. Take it to your relationships. If you're an athlete, take it to practice with you. These three keys. This applies everything you do. You have to have a willingness. You have to have availability. Right? Your best virtue that you have in life is just being available, just showing up. Right? Now, the second thing that David has, and we're not going to take this for granted, the fact that if you look at the scriptures, it says that then staff in hand. So he was ready. He had a staff in hand. David selected five smooth stones from the wadi. All right. So David knew from being prepared how to do this, how to shoot a slingshot. This is not something he just picked up today. He knew exactly which stones, which type of stones to pick up from the river. He knew that these smooth stones were the ones that would fit well into a slingshot, the type would fly well and land well. So he was prepared. He was trained. He was equipped. by evidence that he had a slingshot in hand. He was equipped. He was ready to go. This is the same thing that Liturgy of the Catholic Mass does. It prepares us to go into the world to do battle. That's why we begin with repentance. Then in the second movement in Mass, we go to revelation. We hear from God. We hear how much he loves us. Then we confess God how much we love him. And then we receive him in Holy Communion. So we're equipped. We're prepared. Now we're ready to go do battle, right? It's a pedagogical training. It's repetitious training that the Mass does with us every day and every Sunday day and Holy Day of Obligation. We're constantly being prepared to go out into world to do battle. That's why it sends us. That's what the Mass wants us to do. If the Mass out there is something greater than that, then the Mass would just keep us there. The Mass would say, no, just stay here. You don't need to go anywhere. Just sit in the pews. We have bathrooms here. We can have a little sleeping bag for you. We're bringing some food. We'll cater some food. Just stay here. No, the Mass doesn't want us to stay there and worship. The Mass wants us to go out and do the acts of the apostles. So that's number two. So number one, again, willingness, availability. Number two, preparation. David was prepared to go out and do battle with Goliath. Now, here's the last piece. Take this with you as well. Execution. Execution, execution, execution. When a Mass dismisses us in the et missa est to go be in the world who we have become through the liturgy, we are executing with our hands and our feet God's calling on our life, our vocation. In David's case, when Saul says, go, he gives him that et missa est, go, the Lord be with you. We're greater than David. Saul said, go, the Lord be with you. The priest says, go, the Lord is in you. All right? So we're greater than David. David just had a blessing from Saul, a king. We have the king living in us to go do battle. And so David executed. He executed. He took a slingshot and he took down Goliath. But with just one, he picked up three stones or five stones from the wadi. He only needed one. He was prepared. Execution, right? Bad execution where he would have, you know, half shot it five times or something like that. No, he's execution. But here's one thing I want to pass on to you, that this is very essential to who God has called you to be. I'll take this with you right now. Notice how, let me bring this back up for you too, so you can see it. Let me show this to you. So David had walked up to Goliath, and you know, Goliath is, you know, he said to David, am I a dog that you come out against me with a staff? Right? Then it says the Philistine cursed David by his gods and said, come here and I will leave your flesh, the birds of the air. And David said, you come against me with a sword and spear, Shimtar. I will come against you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of armies of the Israel, of armies of Israel, you have insulted. And then David says, I will strike you down, cut off your head. This very day I'll leave your corpse. So on and so forth. So what's going on here is the same thing that you may see on a football field. You may see on a hockey field, anywhere, right? Boxers do this. David and Goliath are talking trash. They're talking trash to each other. I mean, mad trash. We haven't seen people talk trash like this since, I don't know, Muhammad Ali and Frazier. We haven't seen, this is just sheer trash talking. Right, David, you know, Goliath is like going off with him, talking trash to him, as David's just talking trash right back. He's not backing down. And so I love this, and I love this for you, and I want you to hear this. Sometimes, and I would say all the time, maybe sometimes, it's important for you to tell people what the Lord is about to do in your life. It's important for you to tell people what the Lord is about to do in your life. We could call it trash talking if you want to, but that's exactly what it is. Sometimes, like Kendrick Lamar said, that sometimes you just have to pop out and show them. You gotta pop out and show them better than tell them. Because when you tell people what the Lord is about to do in your life, and then God does it, who gets the credit? Not you. Not you. God gets the glory for having done it. So this is why you want to tell people, why you want to talk that holy trash and talk that divine trash and tell people, God, if God has told you something he's about to do in your life, tell people about it. Confess it. There's rules I hear, 48 laws of power and all these other things that, you know, people say, don't brag and don't boast, you know, keep your life a secret and things like that. Do certain things in the shadows, you know, so people don't see you coming, things like that. You know, there's some merit to that. We can say as Christians, sometimes we say, you know, like your tithes and offerings. Yeah, maybe you don't want to boast about those and things like that. But at the same time, God calls us to give him the glory. So if there's something that you know that God is about to do in your life, you're about to be ordained a priest, you're about to enter seminary, you're about to graduate or something like that. If these things that you know that God has blessed you with this course, and you're on this course and it's on a path of maturation, something's about to happen in your life, you're about to get this job, right? It's okay to give God the praise and glory. Say, this is what God is about to do in my life because I've been faithful. I've been obedient. And this is what God is about to do. And when it happens, people will look back and say, it happened. And it's because of what God did for this person. It's what God did for David. David didn't get any credit for what he did to Goliath. We gave God the credit for that because it's what he did. So this is what we do. As Christians, we give God the glory. We talk that trash. We talk that smack. And we give God the glory for what he's done, what he will do, because we are his people and we belong to him. So this is David L. Gray in the morning. I'll be back same time tomorrow. Thanks for tuning in. But until then, until next time, blessings and shalom to you and to yours.
Yeah, wait. I want to this.
Wake up. It's time to start your day. No better way than rolling with David L. Gray. Wake up. It's praise and morning prayer. Then news and reflections with David L. Gray. And share. It's David L. Gray in the morning with joy in the air.
Good morning.
Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Got the spirit moving.